Madeleine Albright records in her memoirs, The Mighty and the Almighty, many practitioners of foreign policy, including me, have sought to separate religion from world politics, to liberate logic from beliefs that transcend logic. This attitude contrasts sharply with Secretary Kerry at the launch of the State Department's Office of Faith-Based Initiatives. He admonished, "We ignore the global impact of religion at our peril."
That's Alan Kaisvet, a scholar from the Middle East Institute. It's a fascinating idea. At a time when religious violence inflames so many parts of the world, it's a good question. How do religion and the secular craft of diplomacy interact? What should the role of religion be in the practice of diplomacy? Now, on first impression, this possibly falls directly into some idea of the separation of church and state. But will that make diplomacy work? How can you have the conversation when religion is so much a part of the issues that diplomacy might attempt to resolve? Sarah Silvestri has been working at this fascinating intersection between international relations, religion and diplomacy. She's a senior lecturer in international politics at the City University in London, director of research at the von Hugel Institute at the University of Cambridge, and joins us now from London via Skype. Sarah, welcome.
Hi.
This is a really fascinating area. And is diplomacy, is it ill-equipped, do you think, to, in the way it's traditionally practiced, to unpick the modern conflicts, so many of which are based around religion?
Yes, diplomacy has been ill-equipped so until now, insofar as we consider the mental frameworks that guide and the ideas and ideologies that have been guiding Western diplomacy in particular in the last 100 years or so, because diplomacy has been guided by the assumption that religion does not belong to that field. But now the events that have characterized the last 40 years or so have shown that actually religion in its many multiple shapes has been affecting to a high degree international politics. It's not just one layer, one surrounding component of bigger dynamics. It's actually been at the center of major transformations of world politics.
It's almost fighting apples with pears to approach a conflict which is fundamentally about belief in a way which is fundamentally secular.
The point is that with the process of globalization, we have been forced with rethinking completely diplomacy. Mm-hmm. Globalization has pushed us to reconsider the way in which diplomacy had been considered theoretically and also practiced. And so the transformations of the last decades have shown that actually religion appears as a relevant component of diplomacy, because religion cannot be pinned down to one particular thing or one item or one actor or one idea. Religion appears in multiple shapes and consists of beliefs, rituals, communities, religious leaders, political leaders, and these different components are emerging as relevant actors, as relevant features in multiple different diplomatic situations.
Is there an assumption, Sarah, in the traditional practice of statecraft and diplomacy, that religion is insincere, that realpolitik is the dominating force and that's the playing field?
Certainly, but that's the Western understanding of diplomacy. It's a Western understanding that is very heavily built on the history of Europe and of the West from the 17th century onwards, and has been built by the historical events and the involvement of religion in the transformation of Europe and the West, which has shown sort of a negative character to religion. Diplomacy, even if now we are talking of global diplomacy, is still building on ideas and assumptions of the past, and in particular of Western cultures. And Western cultures have experienced the negative side of religion, the religious wars of the 16th and 17th century, as the West has gone through the sort of major ideological transformation brought up by modernization and by the Enlightenment, which has push aside religion as if religion was bringing backwardness to society and would impede the progression of human independence and human thinking. So these guidelines have shaped the way in which diplomacy has been practiced so far. But nowadays we've seen that actually the events that we've experienced in the last few years contrast with the assumptions of the past. And so the tools of diplomacy that existed until now to respond to particular crises are no longer suitable, because the events that we're facing now do involve religious actors or religious institutions or religious beliefs as part of the problem or part of the solution, and it is simply impossible to ignore them. So whether we individually, diplomats, like or do not like the idea of involving a religious element in the practice of diplomacy, at least they cannot ignore the fact that the diplomacy, the object of diplomacy, does involve religion.
Sara Silvestri has been working on this fascinating intersection between international relations, religion, and diplomacy. She's a senior lecturer in international politics at City University, London. Sara, that's a very, in a sense, putting the onus there for understanding on the West, if you like, if we use the West as the example of the secular in this conversation. How does that apply in reverse when we, for example, have perhaps a negotiation with a regime or a group who are very fundamentalist in their religious belief and who exclude any possibility of a secular conversation? I mean, is there an equal onus on that group to admit the possibility of that secular conversation?
Yes, of course. The transformation of diplomacy in becoming responsive to the presence of religion in global politics does go two ways. That's also required that other actors do appreciate the fact that other diplomats may be coming from a different perspective vis-a-vis religion or secularism. But what we are trying to do in our research on the links, in the intersections between religion and diplomacy, is that we do not want to simplify the understanding of religion by just adding a label or a layer to the practice of diplomacy. We would like to encourage diplomats and countries to understand the nuances of religion and be able also to differentiate when and how religion is relevant or not. In cases where you have fundamentalist groups or where you have a dictatorship that is manipulating religion, to be actually more knowledgeable, to have diplomats that are more knowledgeable about the nuances of the religious tradition of that particular country is very important in order to recognize the different actors, also the silent actors and the dynamics of power that are underpinning the particular crisis that they're facing.
That sort of an understanding, Sara, I would imagine would be fundamental to any meaningful conversation between, say, the US and Iran, where all those complexities would be in play, where that need for understanding would be quite high.
Of course, the relationship between Iran and the US requires a very sophisticated understanding of the multiple actors and relationships of power in the country. But sometimes, decisions in diplomacy need to be taken quite quickly, and you have also a high mobility of staff, people posted abroad, of diplomats or also officials that are working back home. And so sometimes, not always you get the ideal situation where you have the most knowledgeable people involved in making decisions or in writing papers that are going to have a big impact. Sometimes decisions around big crises are taken very fast. And people are guided also by sort of the political climate of the particular moment. And the practice, the ideal practice of diplomacy does not necessarily correspond with strategic decisions that maybe politicians want to take or want to appear to be taking.
How well equipped, Sarah, are the modern diplomatic services? I mean, how much is this thinking become part of the training of new people in diplomatic service?
It is very diverse so far. You can observe an increase in interest in this topic and scattered ad hoc attempts in various countries, in particular the Anglo-Saxon world is particularly active in this. So the activities of the Foreign Office, of the State Department, of some Nordic countries like Sweden and Norway have invested in training in specific areas. A lot of the work has been conducted in the context of foreign policy linked to development work. In other contexts like the US, there has been a push towards considering religion in the context of a particular narrower scope of religious freedom, and so connected to so the engagement with the topic of religion is specific to issues related to freedom of religion. And then you have other countries in Europe, for instance, like in France or in Italy, where there is no particular specific subfield where money or staff have been put into, but there is new offices have been opened in the context of the policy and analysis units, which therefore are encouraged to look for religious dimensions of the different contexts that are in which those countries are operating.
It's probably significant to point out too, Sarah, that when we speak about religion in this context, we're not just talking about Islam.
No, definitely not. And that's actually, in a way, a big effort, I think, in terms of encouraging countries and governments to and international institutions to open up and be sensitive to the issue of religion, is also encouraging them to broaden their horizons and consider the relevance of religion beyond the immediate quote-unquote threat of Islamist violence that we have been seeing in Europe and in the Middle East recently. Because religious issues and religious beliefs are underpinning also a number of smaller transformations in society in also many other parts of the world. And the work of diplomacy in relation to Islam might also be affected by the way in which more broadly countries or global institutions are positioning themselves vis-a-vis religion as an issue. Mm-hmm. So the skepticism towards religion per se and this big divide, these assumptions that secularism is the best place and the best way through which the democracy can be built is an assumption that does not relate necessarily to Islam only, but then becomes particularly poignant when global institutions have to relate to particular Islamist actors.
Sarah, thank you. A fascinating area. Look, a range of pertinences in the modern world. Sarah Silvestri, Cambridge University.